Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us. We also have just recently launched our new therapeutic ebook bundle. So those are all of the resources from the club in 2019 and 2020, the first year that we did the club. And there's so much information in there for you guys.
But it's all organized so you don't get overwhelmed.
Yep. So lots of the visuals and the handouts and things that we talk about in our podcast episodes we have in there. So you guys can check that out with the show notes, the link in our show notes.
Yep. Everything is linked. It's all there. So you can get it.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Sensory Project Show. This is Rachel.
And Jessica.
And today we are doing, you know, another one of our question and answers, our Q&A episodes.
Yep. So we got all these questions from Instagram kind of a long time ago. It's been a while.
We've just been accumulating them, I feel like.
Yes, that's true. So we'll just jump right in. We got a question about the visual vestibular auditory triad.
Oof, love that.
And I was thinking we will link some research articles in the show notes and in the blog, so make sure you check those out. But I will say from our experience, we see correlations between these three systems constantly.
Oh, nonstop. Yeah.
I think the big thing is that the vestibular system is related to everything. It's related to our entire body because the vestibular system is our sense of where our body is in space and related to movement. So anytime we move our head, we are activating the vestibular system. And at the same time, our eyes are going to follow that head movement.
Exactly. One thing that I like to use as an example of just how important this visual vestibular system is, just relating to these two systems, is when you're driving in a car, right? And especially if you are stopped and you're trying to plan when to pull out in front of traffic. So you have to be turning your head, watching where these cars are. Your eyes have to be able to track where those cars are in relation to you. And you have to figure out when the heck to pull out in front of these cars so you don't get hit. And if your visual vestibular system isn't integrating as it should, well, it's a huge safety concern, number one. And number two, you're in big trouble in Little China.
And, you know, we see this with little kids all the time. Like, you know, I'm thinking specifically of young toddlers as they're learning to walk and navigate their environment. And those kiddos whose visual system is more up in the air and not as much down to where they're walking and navigating, they're going to be bumping into things and tripping. And then that's going to mess with their vestibular system as well. So, yeah, those two systems are directly linked.
And that's kind of why we push crawling so much in infancy, is because when infants are crawling, they are working on integrating the system and figuring out where their body is in space, and their visual system is connecting with their vestibular system. And like in a previous episode, we talked about ear infections, that, you know, plays a huge part as well, just because the vestibular system is so close to the auditory system. I mean, your vestibular system is in your ears, and clearly that's how we hear. So, duh.
I was also going to mention, you know, you talked about crawling, but I even think it starts earlier than that. It starts with tummy time, mm-hmm. and rocking and bouncing with the caregiver, and then, you know, rolling is going to really activate that visual vestibular system, and then continue on to the crawling as well.
See, I'm going to even one up you and say it goes even before then into the womb.
Well, of course. But the challenge with the womb is that, you know, babies' eyes aren't open to see.
There's no visual input. You're right. And the auditory and the vestibular system are connected there for sure.
Yes, there it is. So it's all connected, you guys.
It is. And that's why, you know, I'm going to go down like a little bit of a soapbox, but that's why it's so important if, you know, if you're pregnant and maybe you are on bed rest. You know, I see such a connection between moms who are on bed rest and their babies having some sensory differences. But if you can just get a little bit of movement, even just rocking in a chair, you know, and standing up and sitting down and laying over a therapy ball, those types of activities will help to work on integrating those systems before the baby is even born. And so just keep in mind, you know, when your baby is born, they were used to moving inside of you nonstop. And then if you take that away and they're not moving at all, it's going to turn their world upside down. They're going to go from having a lot of movement in utero to none at all in the outside world. So keep that in mind.
Or even, you know, going along on the soapbox, or even being put into containers and having unnatural movement constantly instead of being on the floor and being carried where they're getting that natural vestibular input. So.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. So that question went in a lot of different ways.
Yep. And we have to move on before we keep going.
All right. So the next question we got is relating to visual therapy in occupational therapy. So we have a couple of episodes that we want to refer you guys to because they are full of great information. The first one is actually with a vision therapist. I'm going to call him a vision therapist. I know that's not what his actual title is, but his name is Dr. Johnson. He's local here in Boise. So definitely check out that episode. And then the other one is called, is it vision or ADHD? Mm-hmm. And so that's another one to listen to. And the last one is just all things visual processing. And so we will link those out in the show notes, and those will give you some more information.
Yep. Check those ones out. Next question was about how to measure progress to see if intervention is helping. Rachel and I are occupational therapy assistants, so we do not complete the initial evaluation for occupational therapy, and we also do not create the goals. However, being in the field for as long as we have and with collaborating with our occupational therapists, we've definitely learned some things here, I think. So first, I think you need to make sure that you're using standardized testing and that you're doing it accurately each time.
And you're doing it the same way each time.
Yes. Yeah. And so you have to make sure that you understand the test, you've got some practice in, and you're taking notes, whatever you got to do to make sure that it's the same each time.
So the other thing that you want to keep in mind is creating measurable goals. So like Jessica mentioned, we don't make the goals. We collaborate with our OT to help make sure that the goals are in the right area for the kiddo once we've been seeing them for a while. But you want to make sure that these goals make sense for the child, for where they're at, and you want them to meet them. I mean, we don't want to create goals that are unmeetable, you know? So keep that in mind. And once you can see the progress in those goals, I mean, that was the initial question, is how to measure progress. Once you can see the progress with your measurable goals, then you can increase the challenge of the goal as the child continues to meet it. So that way you can get them functioning at age level or as close to modified independent as possible.
And I think the last thing too is to just make sure you're constantly collaborating with the family, because if the family is seeing progress at home in the areas where the child struggles, I mean, that's the ultimate goal, is so that the family can be successful.
And also piggybacking on that, make sure that the family actually wants this goal as part of their plan. Because yes, if you create a goal working on meal prep independence and the family doesn't care if the child can make meals themselves, then it's not going to be a meaningful goal and they're not going to work on it and they're never going to make progress towards it, because if you just work on it in therapy, that's not enough. So keep that in mind as well.
Next question was about primitive reflexes. You guys, welcome to our podcast, because we have a lot about we have a lot about primitive reflexes. If you haven't been listening to us for very long, maybe you don't know. Rachel reminds me about this all the time, that maybe we have new people.
Whoa. We do have new people who join us all the time, which is awesome. So we have to fill them in on all of our treasures.
Yes. So we do have an entire podcast series on primitive reflexes. So make sure you check that out. There's 5 episodes. And then we do have our primitive reflex crash course that you can get so many amazing tools from that crash course.
Yes, because we teach you how we test for those reflexes, and then we teach you exercises to work on integration. But we also take it one step further and teach you activities to implement to work on integration and games, so that way your kiddo doesn't feel like they're just doing boring exercises every day, because nobody likes that.
Nope, sure don't. Mm-hmm. So check that stuff out. We'll link those in the show notes as well. Next question was about baby backpacks versus wraps. Now, my personal experience was when Logan was young, we used like a backpacking carry pack that, and I mean, made for, you know, infants and toddlers. And so we used that. I didn't have a wrap. I never used a wrap. I carried him.
At the time of this recording, I don't have a child yet, but maybe by the time that it airs, I could have a child. So
you absolutely will.
So I kind of have a little bit of everything to try out. I think it's called a Tula backpack. Like, it's a front carrier, back carrier, that I'm really excited to try. Daniel's actually really excited to try that too. And then I have a Moby wrap for when he's small. And then my mom actually made a ring wrap. So it has a ring on it, and you can adjust it that way, but it's a little front wrap that kind of looks like the Wild Bird wraps, if you guys are familiar with those. But I think the most important thing is just making sure that the child is positioned properly and you don't have them front facing too soon. You are focused on their hips and their hip position. And then maybe we'll also link a little bit about hip dysplasia and kind of post some of that information in our show notes as well, so you guys can get more visuals on how to position your baby in the carrier the right way. But I think, like Jessica said, it's to each their own.
I will say that all of these carrying, you know, devices, I guess you would say, apps, backpacks, whatever, ultimately those are better than a stroller or carrying your child in the car seat, which I'm not knocking it. Like, you know, we all do it here and there. But these carrying packs are going to be so much better because your infant is going to get natural movement. And we need that natural movement.
Absolutely. And just going along with that, carrying your baby on your hip too is another great way to get natural movement. Their head is going to be in tons of position changes. You're turning them, you're bending, you're reaching, you're doing all those different things. So just try to switch it up so you're not doing the same thing every day. I think that would be the takeaway here.
Absolutely. Okay, so the next question was about regression tips for primary school age children. First things first, regressions are bound to happen because life is constantly changing. Children are constantly growing and learning new things. So regression, I feel like, is natural.
It is. I think it's a good sign, honestly. It's a sign that your child is telling you that they need to change, or they need something different, or they need something in general. Mm-hmm. And so we always like to say, stay positive, try to keep your poop in a group as much as you can. I know it's frustrating whether you're a parent or a therapist or educator, but we also want you to try to find the underlying reason and address that, if possible.
Yes. So, you know, is your child struggling with sleep? Has there been a change in the daily routine? Has there been any new medications or any new foods introduced recently.
Mm-hmm. Are they constipated? Mm-hmm. Are they having a hard time going to the bathroom? And if you're not already using visuals as part of your routine, that can make such a big difference. So whip those out and start using visuals to help in this area.
Yep, absolutely. And as always, you know, empathize with them. Let them know that their feelings, whatever their feelings are okay. There's no bad feelings. And just, you know, be there for them as they're struggling.
So the next question we got was in regards to sensory integration and trauma, which y'all know everything's connected. We talk about it all the time. We do have a couple of episodes geared towards these topics that we want to point you in the direction of first. So the first episode is with Michael Klinkner, and we'll link that one. And then the second one we want to refer you to is the one that launched last week with Katie from Thriving Littles. She shared lots of great information with us as well.
Yep. So go check those out. The next question is how to assess if a 1 or 2 year old needs occupational therapy or if they have sensory issues. So first of all, parents, trust your guts. If you feel like something is off, don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
And don't wait. I have heard that people don't think that OTs can help their child until they're older, but the earlier that you can get your child help, the better off they will be and the better off you will be, because you'll have more tools in your toolbox and you'll have more information as well. So definitely what Jessica said, trust your gut, follow your mama instinct, and don't take no for an answer. If you need to go to a different pediatrician who's going to listen to you, go to a different pediatrian.
Absolutely. Also, Sensational Brain has a free sensory checklist that you can use to kind of get a better idea of if your child is seeking input or if they are avoiding input, and kind of see where they fall in that regard to see if they're struggling.
Yes. If you're noticing that they are having more challenges in the area of sensory processing abilities, we have quite a few episodes that are geared towards each specific sensory system. And then we also have a podcast dedicated to early signs and symptoms of sensory processing challenges. So that is a good resource. All of those are good resources to look into. And then we also have a sensory diet crash course as well. If you are in need of tools and resources to make a sensory diet or create a sensory lifestyle for your child, then definitely check out that course. It's just go at your own pace, super simple, and we give you everything that you need in there.
Yep, bam, there it is. All right, next question. Attention issues related to sensory processing. Yes, we go throughout our lives and we are getting bombarded by sensory input 24/7, all day, every day. And if your body cannot process the sensory input that is coming at you, there's absolutely no way that you are going to be able to focus or pay attention to anything.
Yes. And can I actually share something that I just recently found?
Uh-oh.
It's good. It's like a very tangible differentiation between ADHD and sensory processing challenges.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So we're going to use the vacuum as our example, right? So we'll start with a child with sensory processing challenges. You turn the vacuum on, they cover their ears, they have a big reaction. But the next time that you turn the vacuum on, it's the same reaction. So their brains are not modulating that auditory input as they should. Okay, so you turn on a vacuum cleaner for a child who maybe is presenting with more ADHD. They have the same initial reaction. They cover their ears. And then the next time the vacuum turns on, they have less of a reaction. And so each time their body learns to modulate it because they can, because they have attention issues, they don't have sensory processing issues. And so that's like a big difference between the two, how you can kind of rule those out. So I thought that was really interesting.
That is super interesting. And it's a good point to kind of make sure you're taking note of the reactions to these different challenges and seeing if those reactions change over time.
Yes. But don't think that if your child has a big reaction one time to the vacuum and then they don't afterwards, don't think that they have ADHD. It's just if you have a kiddo with ADHD and you have a kiddo with sensory processing disorder in the same room, that's kind of what their reactions will look like separately. So just some food for thought. But also anytime someone comes to me and says, you know, my child, I think they have ADHD, I'm like, let's rule out sensory processing challenges first. Please, 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 let's rule it out.
Yes, and especially vision. We want to assess their vision, get them to a vision specialist to rule out any specific vision challenges, because when a child cannot process their world visually, they will not be able to pay attention to anything.
Exactly. And going along with that, rule out auditory processing challenges as well. So whether, yes. So whether it is a hearing issue, whether it's an actual processing disorder, whether it's central auditory processing disorder or not, that's going to make their life way harder as well. And it's going to look like ADHD as well. But yes. They do look very similar.
Yeah, they absolutely do. We do have an episode on ADHD and vision. So make sure you check out that episode as well for more info.
Yes.
All right. Next question was about emotional regulation. We have a ton of episodes all around emotional regulation. We actually got to interview the creator of the Zones of Regulation, which is a tool that we love to use. So make sure you check out that episode.
And then we also have an episode that is called Our Favorite Tools for Regulation. So we're just sharing which one of our favorites. So we're just sharing all of our favorite tools that we use in therapy that you can use at home or in therapy for your kiddos. Now, we also like to share lots of emotional regulation strategies in our membership site, the Sensory Project Club, and that is a great place if you're needing more resources or if you're in need of something specific and you hop in and join the club, you can ask us there and we will create it for you.
Yep. Okay, next question was on how to help a kiddo stop biting their nails and biting their skin. So I like that Rachel just brought up the Sensory Project Club because we actually created a specific resource for this challenge. And we put that into the Sensory Project Club for September, which if you are listening to this episode on September 30th, the day that it airs, today's the last day to join the Sensory Project Club to get September content. So if you want this resource to help your child stop biting their nails and their skin, sucking their thumb, go join the Sensory Project Club and get that resource right now. Okay, last one. Last question.
All right, now the last question we got was asking about challenges of adults with disabilities. And we are just going to be straight up with you guys. We don't specialize working with adults with disabilities. The adults that we do work with, they are 18 to 21, and they're still in our pediatric setting. So it's not our area of expertise, but if you have more specific questions, whoever sent this question in, we're not sure. If you have a specific question that maybe we can help with, send us that. But if anyone who is listening has some strategies or resources they can share with us, then send them to us via email at thesensoryprojectshow208@gmail.com.
All right, you guys, hopefully this episode was helpful. We answered some questions, gave you some ideas on other episodes to listen to as well, because we do have, we have a lot of episodes, guys.
We do. And it's awesome being able to have like a bank of podcast episodes to refer everybody to, because we've done a lot. There's a lot of free information out there that we've shared, and we want you guys to take advantage of that.
Yes, please do. Keep sending us your questions. Leave us a review on iTunes if you have a moment.
Yeah, and stay positive and stay happy. And let's just work together to create Confident Kids.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, guys. We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.